We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome, everybody.
We are the Pettiest Bills Podcast.
I'm not bright enough for all of that.
Drew Gator.
Because I thrive off negativity, it's just more hackery from a charlatan and a carpetbagger.
The Rock Pile Report.
My blood pressure's rising.
He gave him Coors at banquet beers out of spite.
The Pettiest, Hardest Drinking Bills Podcast.
I'll go to hell and back just to prove a point. Everybody to another edition of the Rock Pile Report podcast. I'm your host, Bill's season ticket holder, Drew Gear. That's my producer, Chris Krueger. Here with us tonight, you know him, you love him, a lot of you have missed him, Mr. Bruce Nolan of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast. And tonight we're taking a look at defensive backs in the 2024 draft class. Now, Bruce, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of questions. I'm sure people have been, you know, I'm sure that there's a part of you that enjoys seeing all the people tweeting at you and knowing that you're missed. What have you been doing with your free time since the closure of the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network?
Well, first off, I think that the most important thing is, are we really allowed to consider me Bruce Nolan of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast when there is no current Bruce Exclusive Podcast at this moment? I think maybe we just need to start saying, well, this is Bruce. He does nothing. This is the Bruce formerly of the Bruce Exclusive Podcast, the homeless Bruce Nolan. I have been enjoying my time off as best as possible. I took my wife out of town. We had a trip, which is very, very, very unlike me. For those of you who know me, you will know that I am not a traveler. I do not like to go out of town, but I am married to someone who has friends out of town. So I wanted to take her to see her friends, and we had a good time, and that was fun. And now I'm back, and I'm 3-4 days behind when it comes to NFL draft prep. So I'm scrambling because I'm not creating content, and just because I don't have a plan for creating audio content anyway, until at least the NFL draft, I did this anyway. That's the thing. Like, before I ever created content, I still did this. I was still watching the prospects and writing up the pluses and minuses and doing the rankings. I did it for fun. So there's very little different for me when it comes to draft prep now than there was before. The only difference is I don't have to organize it quite as neatly. It looks a little bit crazier. There's a whiteboard that may or may not have scribbles on it. There's a notebook that may or may not look a little bit like a deranged lunatic. But aside from the organization of the thoughts, the overall process for me has been very similar.
See,
let me ask you this. Our listeners are going to want to know this, and especially the listeners that are listening to this because they loved to listen to you. They're going to want to know what airport you flew out of to go on your trip.
One that wasn't good. There you go. I nailed it down.
So Newark. We'll start there. We'll start with Newark and work our way down. That place is a trip. They should burn that thing down tomorrow.
Have you been to Atlanta recently?
No.
Drew? Atlanta's airport is a whole thing, man. We'll do an entire another podcast at some point on Atlanta's airport. It's a piece, man.
Jesus. That's what gets me on travel. But the thing you just described, I think podcast listeners have a hard time wrapping their heads around this concept, because I think a lot of them assume that the things that we're doing because they're here. Now, we've been very transparent with our listener base, but I think it's interesting to hear people kind of recognize for the first time that it's almost like stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedians who are really good at what they do didn't get that way because they saw The Art of Stand-Up Comedy and said, hey, you know what? I should try that, and that's how I'm going to make a living wage. It happens as a byproduct of a weird thing of, you know, there's a little, maybe a little bit of mental illness. Maybe there's some self-loathing. There's some things that draw that out. This content creation stuff is no different. It's what we do here is just an extension. Like, once you reach a certain level of it, you've gotten to a certain level of, I don't want to call good. I don't call what we do good. We just show up and do it every week, and for some reason people turn it on. But you do it because without this here, the cameras, the producer, the laptop, it would still be me just at a bar, probably drinking, and the first unfortunate person to sit down next to me and mention the Bills would catch a podcast or a waterboarding or whatever you want to call it.
Or both. Depending on the quality of the podcast.
And so it's that concept of this that we do needed a place to park itself, and podcasting kind of gave us a convenient outlet for it, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is conversations that I was going to have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It was just conversations that my wife would have to listen to, or it's conversations I would have with myself in the car, or it's conversations that an acquaintance might ask me. So, you know, what are your Bills going to do in the draft? You've made a mistake. Right? So instead of that, I can just say those things into a microphone. Now, I will say that the process of podcasting and being part of the space for 5.5 years now is how long I've been part of the space, which is just absurd to me, like Dalton Kincaid level absurd. And so for me, I think I'm better at that now. It forces you to refine the skill, but the desire to do the thing was always there. I'm just better at it now than I was before. I'm not saying I'm good at it. I'm saying I'm better at it, because I listened to my initial podcast a while ago. Went back and listened to like my first show, and I was like, yeah, I'm better now. I think I'm better now than I used to be. And I think part of that's just being more comfortable with the way that you speak in front of a microphone and having the cadence and doing things like that. But also it's just that confidence of knowing how my preparation went and knowing what I want to say, knowing how I want to get it done. And so, like you're saying, the desire to do this stuff was always there. It's just this happens to be the outlet, and there's probably a level of precision that there wouldn't be in the bar. But aside from that, the desire is similar.
Absolutely. So I can't, you know, everyone's like, oh, well, are you going to ask? Are you going to ask the question? I'm not going to bother you about what your plan is. I know you're busy enough. Just I'm looking forward to whatever your next foray into this is. And Chris, if we can toast him with these delicious cocktails you made, why don't you go ahead and tell him what's in it?
Well, Bruce, I've been doing old fashions in the way of our guest's location. And unfortunately, I can't tell anybody what is in this cocktail other than it's an old fashioned.
So this is the cocktail that nobody gets to know about.
No. Because we're not, FBI said I can't give away Bruce's location.
This is fantastic. Thank you so much. That was brilliant, and I will drink to that with my bottle of water that I have next to me.
So, and I'm not going to let you forget about this. You do owe me a karaoke throwdown at some point.
I do.
We're going to make this happen. Maybe barbecue, maybe karaoke. We'll figure it out. But so as we start talking about defensive backs in the 2024 draft, you know, if you take a look at the Bills, they're one of the only teams in the AFC that had three different all-pro players lining up for them in the defensive backfield. Now, I think that's something fans maybe lose track of because the hustle and bustle of every NFL season that leads directly into an off season that goes into another season and year over year. And then there's the roster churning that goes on. How many, Bruce, off the top of your head, how many teams can you name that had three all-pro level players in their defensive backfield at the same time?
Ever?
Recently. We'll say in the last, 2024? So go back over the last five, six seasons.
I mean, this is a little bit past six seasons ago, but the Legion of Boom comes to mind.
Okay.
Obviously. The Legion of Boom comes to mind. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers championship team in 2002 had Rondé Barber and John Lynch.
Yep.
In the back. I think the 2000s Ravens defense had a couple on
Ed
the back
Reed.
End that were really good. The 90s Eagles under Buddy Ryan had Eric Allen and Jerome Brown. Jerome Brown was a linebacker, but they had they for a while had Brian Dawkins and Lito Shepard and Sheldon Brown in the back end. That was a later version of the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm thinking back. You're putting me on the spot, so I'm going back. The Miami Dolphins had Patrick Surtain. And who was Patrick Surtain's running mate? I cannot remember who the guy opposite Patrick Surtain was in – oh, man. Dolphins fans are going to rip me. I should know this. But they were at two, like, all-pro level players at that time. Mm-hmm. The Patriots, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law. They transitioned into Asante Samuel. Yeah, there's been some – It hasn't been recently, though. Everything I'm just telling you is 90s to 2000s.
Are you thinking of Brock Marion?
Brock Marion was a safety. Who was the corner across from Patrick Surtain? Because that's what we're going at. And, you know,
we're going. Well, what year do you think this is?
Oh, goodness gracious. No, 90. Start at 91 and go forward, I guess, for that. Oh. While I keep talking, you can...
I will tell you, Surtain started in 98.
Wait, who am I thinking of? Okay, well, I'm just... See, this is great content. When you put me on the spot for this, you get this amazing content where I just throw random names out.
But the fact that you're the Schwab and you know all of these names just off the top of your head is impressive. Now, this is, I guess, the point that I'm trying to make, and I want all of our listeners to kind of raise a glass as a toast. With the Buffalo Bills and with the departures of Trey White... with the departures of Jordan Poyer and the very, very likely retirement of Micah Hyde, like, it's the end of an era that really the Buffalo Bills put something together that hasn't been seen recently in the NFL. And we owe a lot of our organizational success to the development of those players once they kind of reached Buffalo here. I think that's special. And I kind of want to make sure that we give them their due. So, Chris, a toast to those guys.
Yep.
While you're drinking, it's Patrick Surtain and Sam Madison.
Okay.
Oh, I remember that guy.
Excellent, excellent cornerback duo in 1998 for the Miami Dolphins. I have no idea why I started in 91. I think it's because Tecmo Super Bowl was 1991, and in my head, I got that kind of buried in there for some reason. But yes, I was right on the amazing cornerback pair, though.
I think that it's going to be incredibly difficult. And when I say incredibly, I mean incredibly difficult for the Buffalo Bills to just turnkey replicate what they've had with those three players here in Buffalo Bills uniforms. And I feel like that means so much is going to have to philosophically change about how our secondary operates and, as a byproduct, how the defense as a whole operates. And I think that that plays a role into how this draft may kind of play in terms of what they choose to invest in and where. I mean, if you look at what we currently have, we've got a pair of steady starters. I'm looking at it right now. They've got the NFL's best slot corner on a deal that probably keeps him here for the rest of his prime. A safety. We've got a safety who was here, not officially in a starting capacity last season, who is going to be running tandem with a guy who... You think the team believes that based on his propensity for turnovers and some of the splash plays that he made last year might have some of the mental capacity for what Sean McDermott likes to do with his rotating safeties and disguising his coverages. And they believe that those two are the answer, or at least a stopgap. but neither is really a known quantity at this point. And then their backups have 13 starts between the two of them. They're probably better projected as special teamers than starters. So while the wide receiver position dominates all the headlines, if you want to look at the defense and what has made this Sean McDermott defense tick over the years, we've lost a key piece of it in one offseason. It's like, and yes, you can say with age and injury, they kind of, it was decaying as time went on. But now it's gone, and it's time to rebuild. And I don't really know where to start except for safety, right? Like, isn't that kind of the more important of the two?
I think so. I think it's important that we not, this is going to sound very, very interesting, and I have to make sure I thread this needle. I don't want to tell Bills Mafia that they need to replace prime Jordan Poyer and prime Micah Hyde. They have to replace what Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde were. Because we've seen the declination of Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde over the last two seasons. They were not what they once were, although they were still very good players and they were still starters in this league. This was one of those, if you held on a year longer to either one of them, it may have been a, maybe we should have done this last year.
We would have been starting the oldest safety tandem in the NFL. Yeah.
And so when you look at an opportunity for this team to reset, I think you immediately look at safety because it's a natural place to go. Now, the Buffalo Bills aren't completely flipping, right? They re-signed Taylor Rapp for a deal that can be starter money for a player who can, you know, already been in the system. I think he was more well thought of coming from the Rams as a potential player there. I think a lot of people, including myself, who watched him with the Rams said, hey, you know, I really like Taylor Rapp. And then he came here and I think overwhelmingly probably had an underwhelming year relative to expectation. I know that everybody wants to say, well, you know, he helped clinch the division. Yeah, he played 420 other snaps. Did we watch him or just that one play?
And the interesting thing about that is it's this thing about systems and it's the thing about coaching that I think gets lost by a lot of casual fans who just see, okay, I've seen this player's highlight reel from college. You can plug that player into this defense and they're going to thrive. Yeah. It's such a cerebral position, especially what our coach does with them.
Yeah, and when you're watching safeties, which are hands down the least understood position in the draft every year is safeties, because people don't know what to value. They just know what they see. Mm-hmm. And so what they'll do is there's never a situation where a position gets penalized more based on sample size in analysis than safety. It's like, well, if I noticed him doing something cool this game, then he played well. And if I didn't notice him doing anything cool, then he didn't. And part of that is just a function of the logistics of watching football and the fact that most people are still watching football from a broadcast angle, one time through, live, and never again. And I don't think there's a single position that is harmed more by that approach to watching football than safety, because they're out of the screen in most cases while the ball is being snapped. They're the only people who aren't in the screen. And so you really need to be able to digest college all 22, or in this case, the NFL all 22. And also understanding coverage is a big part of that. And we're still in a position in the football content creation community where we don't quite understand coverages. We don't understand split field safeties. We don't understand what the difference is in role responsibility between a single high safety and a split safety, and we don't understand the difference between quarters and cover two, and you know, we don't understand robber coverages and things like that.
And you can also point to some NFL front offices and say even they fall prey to this sometimes, because it's how you see a guy like you think about the safeties we just talked about departing the Bills. Yeah. Micah Hyde was a fourth round pick. Mm-hmm. Jordan Poyer was a, I believe, sixth or seventh round pick of the Eagles. I believe when Sean McDermott was there. Cam Chancellor, he's my favorite. Cam Chancellor was this freak athlete safety for the Legion of Boom, who we just mentioned earlier. 6'3", 225 pounds. He's a monster. Being able to do the things that he can do physically, he was drafted in the fifth round.
It's about fit.
And you say to yourself, how did this happen? And everyone goes, how did a player who could be this get drafted there? And you go, well, it's not just like the NFL draft isn't just about talent. It is about fit. And it's also about what do you specifically plan for that athlete?
I think if Cam Chancellor gets drafted in this draft, I don't think he's even close to being what he was at that time. So the Pete Carroll defensive system at that time that got all those defensive coordinators crowned was primarily a cover three system, and that valued length in your back end players for this cover three system. This is the Richard Shermans. Mm-hmm. This is the Cam Chancellors. And what happened was the NFL sort of adjusted and started consistently hitting cover three systems with these big, deep over routes for explosive plays. And then, of course, what happened is the natural extension of that is that NFL defenses started rotating to quarters and a lot of cover four. And so cover four is the way, you know, when you think about like a rock, paper, scissors situation, right? And you think, okay, cover three is scissors. And they did that because everyone was, you know, trying to have cover two beaters. So they went to cover three. And so now cover three is scissors and you're throwing paper, 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 and you're getting screwed up. Well, then the NFL said, screw that. I'm going to start throwing rock. And so they hit with these big, deep over routes to get explosive plays. Well, then what happened is the NFL adjusted. And so now the NFL runs a ton of cover four. And so the NFL offense is then adjusted again. And now all of a sudden running the ball is like more important than it used to be. Why? Because now everyone's running cover four and you have to loosen up boxes and you're dealing with like, it's all this cyclical, you know, I throw rock, you throw paper, I throw scissors, you throw rock. It's just over and over and over and over and over again. The only thing consistent is having a quarterback who can operate it at a high level, whatever that offensive passing game is important. And so Cam Chancellor, it's not just fit in system. It's fit in system and era. Mm-hmm. I had a discussion on social media not too long ago where it's like, man, I love this guy. Man, he's a hard hitter. And I was like, being a hard hitter isn't that important in today's NFL world. I know it's flashy and we like it.
Go ask DJ Swearinger. DJ Swearinger will tell you everything you need to know about what being a hard hitter in today's NFL is. He was on for a short period of time. He cleaned up his game, but he was on the same kind of skew as Vontaze Burfict was.
Kareem Jackson just got suspended last year for constantly hitting hard. Hey, but this idea that we want an enforcer on the back end is not of value. When you say enforcer in today's NFL, you know what I think of? Penalties.
Yep.
Because we just penalize people who get hit hard. Like, we don't even have to, like, actually see a penalty. We just throw flags because people get hit hard. This idea that receivers are going to have fear coming over the middle. Like, get out of the 90s, man.
I was going
to
say,
that's not the way it works anymore.
Go back to 89. That's what made Andre Reed special, was that he was fearless about going over the middle, knowing that there might be a safety lurking to just take him, just absolutely clean him out. And at the same time, he did it anyway. Now, you get given that. Because of the structure, the penalty structure, everything. So everything's changed philosophically about how you, what type of player you're looking for. And it's even changed, I think, a little bit since Sean McDermott started here. And so in that, you're going to see a change in philosophy. And it's going to be interesting to see how they address this moving forward. Now, if you look at our current room, you could, in theory, get through an NFL season with the current status quo roster. And that's kind of a byproduct of Bean's pre-draft approach every year. Let's shore up the roster so there are no glaring holes, or at least as few as possible, so that if the right value doesn't fall to us, we don't have to reach for something. I got a question. On a scale of dogs to people who think wins are a quarterback stat, how confident do you feel about this room heading into this draft?
That's a really, really good scale, and I'm trying to come up with the right thing. Okay, here we go. You ready?
Yep.
Dog owners.
Okay. Okay.
That's how I feel. It's not as good as a dog, right? But it's better than people who think wins are a quarterback stat. It's someone who appreciates dogs enough to know how special they are, but not someone who's as special as the dog themselves. That is the scale. For me, I would like to see at least one defensive back, specifically a safety, added with, you have 11 picks. Now, I know that Brandon Bean is not going to make 11 picks. I made a joke that I was like, oh, well, you know, Brandon Bean makes 11 picks, I'll show my face to everybody on the internet. I didn't actually say that out loud because I didn't want to commit to that. But he's not going to make 11 picks. Let's be honest.
No.
He's not going to make 11 picks. I'm not going to commit to that because I'm not a betting man. But we all know he's not going to do that. But if you make 9 picks, having one of them be a corner and one of them be a safety is not too much to ask at that point.
No.
And I think you look at this and you think, okay, Taylor Rapp has been a starter before. Mike Edwards has been a starter before. Right? Damar Hamlin filled in fairly admirably during his time when he had the opportunity to do it. You know that you have Cam Lewis there as an option. He's played there, depending on whether or not you believe he's a backup nickel or whether or not you believe he's a backup safety.
All I want to know is has Cam Lewis learned that in the NFL, if somebody throws a ball at a receiver in your vicinity, you swat that to the ground, right? Like, you don't you just swat it to the ground.
It's going to haunt him for the rest of his life, and you're going to be part of it. You know that, right?
You swat it to the ground, right? In fact, if I run into him at training camp this year, that's going to be the question. You know you have to swat that down, right? And just to see his face when you ask the question.
Well, like, thanks a lot, this random person I don't know.
Random dude who just put that into my head for the first time in a year and a half. So there's this other concept I want to pick your brain about. Now, I'm not nearly on the level that you are in terms of the depth of your, or at least your meticulous nature about NFL research. At the same time, I'm a dude who loves spreadsheets and Excel, and I can work my way through trend analysis and data analysis. And so what I did was I went to drafthistory.com and I pulled in all of the defensive back history I could get my hands on. Went back about 10 years. And I started looking at the rounds players were drafted in and then just kind of trying to figure out, okay, who did what where? What was decent value? What was not? And obviously you can't rank them all. You'd be talking about the entire draft. But obviously late round players, you're always hope, like you can't penalize them for being poor or not giving value, quote unquote, being a starter, growing into a reliable player. And also you can't say that a player who was taken in the top, you know, like a Jamal Adams, you can't call him great or above average if you end up trading him in his prime. And it's like, so there's this weird scale, and I tried my best to make a very rudimentary application of just analysis of draft history. You've had a chance to look at it now for about a day. The first thing I want to lead with is, some positions we know deteriorate in terms of production as the draft goes on. Edge rusher is a perfect example. It's been mathematically proven that the sack and quarterback hit and pass rush win rate and all of these niceties we as fans look at, those numbers decrease the farther down the draft board you get over the course of a rookie contract. You know, players drafted in the third round at defensive end or edge don't produce nearly on the level that players drafted at the back end of the first or in the second do. And you just see the way that that goes year over year. You can go back almost 20 years and you see that this trend exists. Meanwhile, safeties, it's much more static round over round. But there might be a sweet spot. Like, I don't know. Like, first of all, your thoughts about the chart that I sent you and just the scattered nature of safety success. Like, what do you think about that concept?
I think this goes back to our discussion about being fit. I think that's what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that, let me ask you this. Have you at any point had a pass rusher get drafted in the NFL and gone, I really like him as a player. I don't know if he's a fit in that system.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened?
Yeah.
Like a pass rusher, like a defensive end, like who's going to rush the passer. You think, well, gosh, yeah, I understand that there's two gapping versus one gapping systems and there's more attacks. But overall, right, if you rush the passer, you rush the passer.
You could say teams.
If you go back to the year that we drafted AJ Epinesa and Drew derailed a live stream, that's the only time that I can think of.
I mean, aside from, there are discussions about, is this guy like a 3-4, 2-gapping, 5-tech, or is he a 4-3 edge player who's a 7-tech or a 9-tech? Like, those are discussions that get had, but it's not the same. as defensive backs. With defensive backs, I mean, you're seeing it with Cooper DeJean this year, where it's all, is he a corner? Is he a safety? You got to put him in a zone thing. Those conversations don't happen with Leetu Latu.
No.
Right? You just he's a really good player, right? Those conversations don't get had with Dallas Turner. Those conversations don't get had with these top edge prospects. I think that's one of the reasons why you can find hits more consistently is that people, you can get lightning in a bottle with a defensive back, specifically a safety. Corners, I think, are more reliant on athleticism, and athleticism has a tendency to trend, correlate more strongly with earlier rounds.
Yeah.
But with safeties, there are the list of safeties who are really good safeties who were perfectly reasonable but not stellar athletes is strong.
Yes.
Because for every single step that you are ahead due to instincts, you are now 0.15 faster in your 40. So if I run a 4.58, but I have immense instincts, I can get there faster than the guy who ran 4.45. That's just the way it works. And so those types of things can happen due to fit. It can happen due to coaching. It can happen due to understanding. Well, you know, this guy does really well playing forward. You'll hear that a lot with safeties. This safety does really well as long as he plays forward. Okay, great. If this guy
yeah.
plays in a particularly deep alignment
yep.
where it's split safety look, right? And you look like, remember when Greg Williams used to line Jabril Peppers like 30 yards off the line of scrimmage when he was in with the Browns? Okay. So imagine if you were a deeper alignment and you split safeties, and now you're playing forward most of the time. All of a sudden, everything this safety does well is being extrapolated in a positive way, and everything they do poorly is being minimized. That type of thing doesn't happen when you are 6 feet from the ball. It only happens when you're 20 yards from the ball.
That's a great point.
That's the reason why I think you can see the smattering of successful safeties, because fit is so much more important the farther you get away from the ball. I'll give you a great example on the offense. Wide receivers, fit matters. If I try to take Amon-Ra St. Brown and I try and play him as an outside X player and say, okay, buddy, go get me a bucket on the outside, he will not be as – I'm not saying he won't be a good player. He's still a good player. But expecting them to be equally as effective regardless of situation is not true at the wide receiver part, and it's not true at the safety part. In fact, it becomes less and less true the farther you get away from the ball. And so that's true on the offensive side, and it's also true on the defensive side. It's the reason why you can have players like Amon-Ra St. Brown hit. It's the reason why we can constantly say, hey, number one target getters all across the NFL weren't taken in the first round. All over the place. Why? It's the same reason as safety. It's because fit matters and schematic fit matters the farther you get away from the ball. It's true on the offensive side. It's true on the defensive side.
And so I think that this exercise that I just put on here and the graph that I sent out, which Chris will pretty up and he'll put that into a template or a something that he can show.
No, just a screenshot on YouTube.
That's okay. What we're looking at here is just this. It's interesting when you look at how many times teams have drafted a safety in the first round and it hasn't panned out versus the number of second and third round prospects, a lot of them, that have turned out to be really good. Because to your point, you're not getting the elite athlete, but you're getting the guy with good athletics who also has instinct. And so in that way, I'm also interested in looking at what the Buffalo Bills historically have done. And when you do that, it gets murky. Like, historically for the Bills, half the reason we're in this position is because, and I hear this from fans, pre-draft, they go, well, we can just wait till later. We have all these late-round picks. We'll just draft a late-round safety because Hyde was a fourth-round pick and Poyer was a late-round pick, sixth or seventh. I still haven't. Well, let me see here. No, I don't even know. It's in there somewhere. I'm not searching for it, Chris, because I don't care. The reality is people look at it and say, well, they were late round picks that developed into X. So we should draft a late round pick because we can develop them into X.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Losing sight of the fact that we signed them in free agency after said team failed to develop them into X.
Seventh round pick, 218 overall.
Okay. So then you look at what the Bills have done. When you look at the safeties, Damar Hamlin, Jaquan Johnson, Saron Neal, Duke Williams, Jonathan Meeks, these are the safeties we've drafted, and the numbers that go along with them in terms of starts and NFL experience is pretty poor. They didn't develop. And that's not to say that they can't. And that's not to say that they won't. Saron Neal may find success elsewhere other than just a special teamer. Jaquan Johnson may move on in the NFL and someday the light just turns on and he finds what you're talking about. The right scheme, the right fit for his skill set that the Bills thought he had. The problem is if all you do is wait until late day three to try to address this problem, then you're not really solving it. Because I think that nuance of how we found Poyer and Hyde gets lost. Some other team had 4 years with that guy. They chipped away at his rough edges. They did some sanding and some work. And then we, our pro scouting department, said, that's a guy who can do the things you want, McDermott. Hey, McDermott, that's a guy who can do all the things cerebrally that you want. He won't cost a ton because he's never been anywhere with any success. I feel like at this point, if we were going to try to address the future of the safety room, because again, both the starters, you just said, you don't hate the room, but if you're going to try to make a move to solidify the future of the room and try to get a little bit closer towards cap solvency for the long term, you almost have to be looking to like day two, right?
Like you said, I think we are using Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde as evidence to solve the wrong crime.
Yes.
I think what should happen is that shouldn't give you all of the confidence in the world that the Buffalo Bills can draft a safety in season, you know, in round six and turn him into an all-pro for at least a season. It should give you a different vibe on the signing of free agent Mike Edwards. That's how Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde should make you feel. Not we can draft somebody in the sixth round. It's we can sign someone to a cheap free agent deal because we understand how they'll fit in our system and they can play at a really, really high level. So for me, when it talks to, you know, we got to look at day two. I think that this class starts day two. And because it starts day two, I think you could probably slip into that fourth round pick and still get a player that I like. You don't have a lot of, it's not top heavy. This class is not top heavy at all. And so because of that, and because of the fact that you're going to have a lot of, maybe an unprecedented amount of offensive players go day one.
Yeah.
I think that you could potentially get away with taking somebody in the fourth and still feeling good about that player as being a future starter in years that you might not otherwise be able to, because you might not have the offensive talent that's going to push people down the board. I mean, I think there's a chance that you see, you know, a meaningful amount of wide receivers drafted this year. And that's going to, we don't realize that, that pushes everybody else down.
Oh, of course. It's rising tide floats all boats. Those boats that are floating push the others out of the harbor.
rising tide floats all boats. Rising receivers sink everybody else.
Yes.
And so I will take that as somebody who wants to be there when that safety falls to us. I mean, I'm not looking at Tyler Newbin. I think Tyler Newbin will be a high second round pick. But I mean, I think that there are players in the draft that you could potentially get in round four that might be players that you could say, okay, well, they can come in and compete. And I wouldn't be shocked. Like, if they came in and beat out Taylor Rapp, we'd be like, oh, that's a little surprising, but not insane. Like, that's the way that we would probably feel about it. And I'm good with that.
So then that begs the question, why is Cooper DeJean visiting the Buffalo Bills? Why is he one of our top 30 visits?
Yeah, I think he's on the table at 28. That's why.
Oh,
and
my
and they would get really mad. Like, by they, I mean everybody. But I think also, this is important. And I'm going to say this. I'll go ahead and say this now. I think Cooper's a corner. I don't think he's a safety. I saw enough. I know the discussion is about the hips, right? But I saw enough good man coverage reps from Cooper that I was like, I'm good with this. Like, I feel good about this. I would start him at corner. So for me, I think he's a corner. So the only thing worse than taking Cooper at 28 for a lot of these people and playing him at safety is taking him at 28 and saying he's a corner. Because the Buffalo Bills do not have a need right now for a starting corner. They have a future need potentially for Rasul Douglas. But, I mean, is Cooper just a more athletic Rasul Douglas? I mean, is that what you're looking at as far as ball skills, as far as size goes? Did the Bills hit on Rasul Douglas in the trade market and think, wow, there's really something to this archetype of player? What if I could get a more athletic version of Rasul Douglas?
Can you imagine being the guy in the meeting room in the draft, the collegiate scouting department, when they're, you know, he has that two interception game against the Patriots. And then he goes and he's kind of talking to the pro scouting guys. He goes, you know, I've got a guy who looks just like that. And everyone's ears perk up and they go, wait, what? Well, why don't you tell me a little bit more about that? What do I need to know? And they go, well, yeah, it's this guy. And they go, oh, he's a first rounder. I don't know. And then they tell McDermott before they tell Bean. Like, I'm watching how this would pan out. So now McDermott goes into Bean's office and it's that thing. If he like knocks on the door and walks in and does like the, hey, buddy, I've got an idea I'd like to run by.
Just before you say no, right? It's like when my wife comes to me because she wants to get another dog. She's going to listen before you say no. I just want you to see this picture of this golden puppy, and I want you to say no to this face. And then all of a sudden she turns around and it's a picture of Cooper DeJean.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And I want you to say no to this guy. Say no to this face. There's a highlight reel of him making some ridiculous interception. And we're like, say no to that guy. I dare you.
I feel like it would have to, if it happens or if it was even thought of, that's how it happened. Like, that's how at least that's how I'd like to believe it happened. Now, in terms of the guys that you're talking about, maybe late day two, depending on what the Bills do. I mean, you heard Brandon Bean's press conference today. He was talking about how he was going to move out of last year's first round pick if the guy that he wanted wasn't there. He's like, he prefers to move backwards rather than forwards. And you think about what that might bring. And I don't know. Who do you like in that late day two, day three, you know, top of day three range? Who are the players?
I like Bo Braid. There.
Bo Braid?
From Michigan.
Okay.
Maryland. I like Bo Braid from Maryland. Okay. So I've fallen into this bad habit. And if you've done any sort of mock draft simulators, which of course you haven't because you hate them.
No.
But if you've done any of them, then what happens is you end up needing to. So I do this. I will frequently jump around between different types of mock draft simulators because I don't want to fall into bad habits. And subconsciously, you start doing that. You start falling into a bad habit where you go, well, I kind of know who's going to be available at this pick. And you start subconsciously making decisions based on who you quote unquote know will be available at your next pick, which would never happen in real mock drafting.
Yeah.
And so it actually defeats the purpose of you doing it. So one encouragement I would make to people who are mock draft simulator aficionados, bounce around, if you will, go PFF to PFN to whatever it is you got to do to get, break yourself free from this idea, because what happens is it also kind of subconsciously ingrains into your brain that something is a reach or something is a steal based on where you saw them go in your simulators, which is probably not a healthy way of going about doing that. So for me, it's Bo Braid. Now, I don't think he's a single high guy. And now this is important. it's really hard to find safeties who do everything, because if they did, they'd be high picks. If you do everything at a high level and you're an elite athlete, you're probably an early round two pick. So for me, I like Braid. I think he's a steady contributor. I think he can come in. I think he's got good instincts. I don't think he's got the level of instincts and athleticism where you can just put him in single high and go, you know what? No matter what happens, we're good there. Like, I feel comfortable that his hips are going to open in the right direction. He's going to pick the right route, and we're going to be protected with just one man back there. I can devote an extra man into the box or coming downhill because I just know that he's got it. But the Bills run a massive amount of cover two and cover four. A huge chunk of what they do is split safety work. And so that allows you to be a little bit more lax with that trait. And I think that one of the most difficult things to do in the NFL is to come run the alley as a safety from depth. I have said this before. I will say it again. It looks unimpressive to you on film. I am telling you right now, as someone who had to do it, it is incredibly difficult to run the alley and come from distance and make a tackle. And
so you
can do that.
You actually tipped your hand earlier this year on Twitter. You talk about how you don't want anyone to know anything about you, but then someone said, hey, something about your first foot, your first touchdown in football.
Yeah.
And you admitted that you were like, oh, well, I don't play offense. Like, I didn't play offense when I scored my first touchdown.
Okay, now this is important. I didn't say I don't play offense. I said my first touchdown was scored when I was on defense.
Okay.
And that is true. And if you'd like, I'll tell you the story.
Please do.
Would you like to know?
Please do. I want to hear it.
It is maybe the greatest touchdown that's ever been scored in the history of youth football. But what happened was I was playing defensive back, and there was a fairly late rotation, and I was coming downhill, and it was a wide receiver screen, and the guy dropped the ball on a wide receiver screen, and they didn't realize that they had thrown it backwards. I just kept running, and I grabbed the ball and ran, and the guy was like, what are you talking about? I was like, and I turned around, I was running with the ball, I turned around and go, you threw it backwards, and I ran into the end zone, and I scored a touchdown. Because they weren't paying attention to the fact that their wide receiver screen was backwards, which means that was a fumble and that was a live ball, and I got a score. Heads up play from Bruce Nolan.
Now I'll say this. As someone who played guard in Pee Wee football, there was a day where just attrition and just the way the game was going, I all of a sudden get thrust into a defensive role, and I can tell you this, the idea of the churn a football is real, and the people who can surf through that nonsense and pick their way through it, they were like, listen, we just need a guy to go out there, you'll stand there and you just watch the defensive end, and if anybody comes around, you clean it up. And I'm like, okay, but like, I'm not an idiot, I know how to tackle, but also this is unnatural for me, I don't have reps at this, I haven't done it. And you'd watch the ball get snapped, and I got to see that what the mess of a front seven looks like for the first time in my life from the other side of the line, and I was dumbfounded, and I just kind of stood there, and it was only, 10, 15 snaps that I had to do this for, but every time I kept looking at it going, I don't know where my eyes are supposed to be, and I sure as hell don't know how to get to that spot. I'm out here. I'm a body. We technically have 11. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. It's incredibly... So to your point, instincts are probably the more impressive thing if you're playing that position, especially if you're trying to come from distance and sift through whatever the hell this thing is and make sure that you're where you need to be.
I would like a quick shout out real quick. I don't think he'll be there early day three. I think he's a day two guy. But I will tell you that I had more fun watching Dadrion Taylor-Demerson than any other defensive back this cycle. So a couple years ago, those who have followed me have known that Amik Robertson was one of my favorites. I loved watching Amik Robertson absolutely be a pest to much larger players. And he's gone and had a perfectly reasonable career in the NFL. I thought he was going to be an early day three guy. But Dadrion Taylor-Demerson is one of my guys this year. I think he's probably a mid to late day two sort of guy, maybe safety 4 to 6 off the board for a lot of teams. And when you talk about a guy who, I said, guys who can do everything and are also elite athletes, I said that people like that aren't available because they go high in round two. This is an exception to that rule. If you look at his alignments and you say, okay, oh, cool. He was a split safety. He was a high safety. He was a nickel. He did all the things you want him to do. And then you look at his testing and go, woo.
Well, I'm looking at it right now. He has his RAS score. So our studio has been reconfigured. Now the TV is up higher. And I love this. He's got the RAS card up in front of me. And that looks impressive.
The issue with DTD is always going to be the physicality. Now, I think I mentioned earlier that I don't need, or quite frankly, even prefer that my safeties be hard hitters or big physical players who are going to be enforcers in the secondary. So my bias is showing here when it comes to DTD, because his weakness is a thing that I value less. So for me, when I think to myself, yeah, like he gives good, you know, he's a good wrap-up tackler. Right. But he's not super physical. He's not going to fight his way off of a ton of blocks. He has a slender frame. And so these types of things, he's also hyper aggressive. So you might have to teach him, hey, you know, maybe don't bump on that, bite on that play action. But this is a guy that you look at it and you go, I feel very similar with DTD than I did about Jaden Reed last year as a receiver coming out of Michigan State. And I just looked around and said, I don't understand. Can someone please tell me why we don't love him? Like, aside from, okay, he's a little thin and he's not a big hitter. Like, yeah, okay, he's aggressive. But, like, is that it? Like, it's not a versatility issue. It's not a coverage skills issue. It's not a hip flexibility issue. It's not an athleticism issue. Why do we not like him? It was the exact same thing I said about Jaden Reed last year. I got on a podcast and I said, I don't understand. What don't you like about him? He makes contested catches. He gets open. He plays across. He can play in the slot. He can play the boundary. He can get off press. He has good runs, good routes. He gets separation quickness at the top of his stem. Why don't you like him? Someone please tell me why you don't like him over and over and over again. He goes on and has a very productive rookie year for Green Bay. Looks like he turns out to be a good player. I feel very similar about Dadrian Taylor-Demmonson. I'm just like, okay, someone please tell me why we don't love him. Aside from what I just said, and those things, I don't even that care about that much.
Well, because if you cared about him, then you wouldn't be in the Teron Johnson fan club.
Hold on. Bruce, I don't know if you know this, but Chris Hogan also played lacrosse.
What? No. Seriously?
So it's good to know that we've talked through the safety position. A couple guys you like. Now, real quick, we'll touch on cornerback. Because, again, it's not an immediate need. But here's what I love. The Bills have a perfectly serviceable cornerback group for this season if you're just looking at the top of the depth chart. But we all know the way that that gets tested over the course of an NFL season, and we all know the way that a team with a coach who played defensive back will perpetually, whether it's late in the draft, undrafted free agents, they're going to be looking to add DBs somewhere, especially to the cornerback room. And the one thing that I will say is that this franchise and this coaching staff over Sean McDermott's tenure has made wine out of water more times at the cornerback position than I think most people are willing to give them credit for. Trey White, all pro talent, drafted late in the draft. In fact, we actually did an exercise where we went through 6 or 7 years of cornerbacks when we took Kyrie Elam, guys who were drafted in the late 20s, and said, this is like, I don't want to say bust zone, but this is where you're not the best guy who has the instincts and the physical traits. You're just drafting physical traits now. Because to your point about safeties, the guys who can still run a 4-4 and play cornerback are there, so you're going to take those guys. And then maybe a guy who runs a 4-5, but he's got instincts, will fall to the second round. And so there's this weird area where cornerbacks get drafted after the 20th pick, where there's a high bust rate there. There's a high rate of guys who get drafted to teams that don't know what to do with them, and they don't fit their system. Trey White comes in here. He's an all-pro. Teron Johnson should be an all-pro, and he was drafted in the 4th round, I believe. Elam is the lone cornerback that hasn't panned out. And then if you look at after round six, Dane Jackson has 28 starts, 52 games for Buffalo. Levi Wallace has played 83 career games in the NFL, 52 starts for Buffalo. Christian Benford is our current starting outside cornerback, and he was drafted.
And he's good.
And he's good.
He's good.
He's top 30 in almost every like PFF stat bullshit. I put some stuff in a pot and rattled it around and called it a statistic. He's top 30 in all of them. So with that in mind, this is a staff that doesn't need to spend a ton of capital when they have a room like this. So if you're talking about developmental day three prospects, there's got to be a couple that you're looking at.
Yeah. I think Dwight McLovin comes immediately to mind.
McLovin?
McLovin, yes. And I think that McLovin is, I think he's going to get, you know, it's really funny. I have read and said his name many, many, many times in the last couple of months. But it wasn't until you just said McLovin that I was like, oh, my gosh, it does sound like McLovin, doesn't it? Like, I kind of feel like I missed in a huge opportunity for a, like a wonderful gif at some point. Like, we're going to draft Dwight McLovin, and then someone's going to Photoshop a picture of McLovin's driver's license, and it's just going to superimpose his face over top of it, and it's, he's going to be McLovin moving forward. I think 26 shirts it would have a wonderful time with McLovin and McLovin.
You know what the problem
is? So I want a nickel every time that gets happens.
You don't hang out with enough idiots. That's the problem. You don't,
I don't hang out with anyone. That's the problem. So I think McLovin is McLovin is to cornerback what DTD is to safety. He is taller, thinner, longer, athletic, good in coverage, and then there's a, well, he's kind of passive from a physical standpoint. If you'll notice, there's an element of physicality when it comes to coverage players that I'm just like, yeah, it's okay. Like, did anybody really get upset about the fact that Deion Sanders didn't tackle? Like, was anyone really angry about that? They were like, oh, well, he doesn't really tackle that well. And I understand that tackling is important for Sean McDermott's defense. But as long as you give good effort in that way, I'm good. So for me, McLovin is a player that I'm interested in, because I think that he has athleticism. I think he triggers well. I think he takes the ball away. This is the kind of guy I want looking at the quarterback. I want him in zone coverage. The Buffalo Bills run a lot of cover four, run a lot of cover two, as previously established. And I like him as a late pick. I think we're probably looking round four, round five for him. I will tell you one other player that I would like to have a chat about, and it's Kalen King. Kalen King coming into 2023 was like, oh my gosh, he's a first round pick. And he just had an abysmal year.
Oh, no.
I mean, just all of a sudden it's a, well, he's a day three guy. It was, he's a day one guy to he's a day three guy. And I am always willing to take a crack on a player who showed that level of tape for that stretch of time, even if it was 2 years ago, in day three. Like, you're swinging for ceiling in day three. And if I know that that type of ceiling is a player that people thought was going to be a first-round pick, then I'm interested. And I know, Senior Bowl practices were rough. He ran slowly, blah, blah, blah. I'm just saying, if I have an opportunity, I have multiple day, you know, round six picks, and I have an opportunity to get someone with the ceiling that we saw from Kalen King in 2022, I will take that dart throw. Yes, please. Thank you. It's a day three pick. It's a sixth round, baby. Swing for the fences. Go ham.
I mean, that's chaff, right? Like, that's the thing that they talk about when they load into the Lieutenant Colonel Yulberg constantly corrects me on my usage of this term, but it's the, that's the thing that you're going to throw out there when the heat seeking missiles are coming. And you're like, this doesn't matter. Nah, whatever. These picks in those rounds with the team where it is, yes, you'd like to hit a starter. You'd like to find a hidden gem, but also it's dart throws. You're just making them. Just go out there and make it.
Yeah.
Look at this guy. Hey, so
hello there.
A bit of a reunion here. Hey, Nate.
Should I play the intro song?
I was going to say, should we get the Food for Thought intro up?
You should sing it a cappella style.
Don't get Bruce and I started.
Listen,
I could get Mrs. Nolan in here and see if she'll do that seductive intro
that she did.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Your table is now ready.
See, now I'm not going to lie to you. I still think now that you're both here, I love this. The karaoke thing that I referenced at the top of the show. Yeah, remember that when your ass wrote a check that I don't think you're...
I'll sing karaoke. I'll do it right now.
Oh, of course you'll do it right now. And well. You'll do it poorly.
And well.
Here's the thing. Nate came on here, Bruce, and he said a thing about how you and him would tandem, like, you and him against me and Chris in a karaoke competition.
I'm not singing.
That's what you're referring to is a slaughter, and nobody wants
the
to
difference
see or hear that.
Is that Chris knows that he's bad. So Chris would take a minimalist approach to
it. Are you saying you're carrying the team? Because if you're carrying the team, that's the weakest team I've ever heard.
Meanwhile, Bruce is your anchor, but his exuberance over how good of a, like, what his vocal talent is, I think that's quietly your undoing. It's like how the Bills walk into Arrowhead most years recently and beat the Chiefs, and everyone's like, oh my God, we're shocked. It's like, is it shocking if it's happened three times now? Like, at a certain point, the confidence, the faux confidence, it comes back to bite you in the ass.
Can I just say that Bruce and I in karaoke versus you and Chris would be like Alabama hosting McNeese State.
And you used an Alabama reference for Drew.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Wonderful.
You're welcome.
Now, the funny thing about that, Chris won't go to see stand-up comedy with me anymore because of Alabama. And that dynamic right there, because Dan Soder was on stage talking about how AI against, like, he's like, once AI just like takes off, we're done. It's over. He goes, it's Alabama Troy, 52 mm-hmm. to nothing. And I'd had a lot of these. And I just was like, I couldn't help it. I couldn't suppress it. I just kind of yelled out, Roll Tide. And he looked and goes, do you see what I'm talking about, folks? Uh-huh. I'm up here talking about human genocide, and this idiot, Roll Tide, all he cares about is the box score.
Once again, Drew, the human punching bag. Unsurprised. Unsurprised.
Guys, I love you. I love the fact that Bruce made time here. Nate, how much do you miss Bruce?
I miss him quite a bit. I actually came early knowing that there would be a chance I could squeeze in and possibly, you know, just chat one-on-one. Maybe you guys leave the room and Bruce and I, you know, whisper sweet nothings to each other.
Can we lower the lights and play?
Dim them?
Can we dim the lights and play I Think We're Alone Now?
No, you have to sing it.
Yeah, that's how this works. I don't know if you knew that's how this works. That's how this works.
Guys, I love the fact that we all know each other through this nonsense that is podcasting. And that no matter how much it changes, like you don't, Bruce, you don't have friends, right? Like,
I have the last time I was having, my wife and I went out with another couple for the first time in what seems like forever, a couple weeks ago. And I was sitting there with him and I said, person's name who I won't share. I
sure.
said, when was the last time that you and I hung out? And he goes, I think it was last February of 2023. And he looks at me and he goes, why? Was that the last time you were out? And I said, yes. Yes. It has been over a year since I have hung out with literally anyone who wasn't my wife. So, yeah.
You know what they call him? Bruce Recluse.
Bruce Recluse.
The Bruce Reclusive.
Wow. See, now I think I've got that right there is a podcast revival.
This is what I'm saying. Like, like when you talk about the relaunch, it's this, right?
Rebranding, baby. I'm gonna send out a press release that just says I'm back. Is what I'm gonna do. Just full. I'm gonna go full Michael Jordan for it.
I'm back. Awesome.
I've come. Someone has to play my lawyer. Like, the following is a release. As it pertains to so-and-so.
We know a lawyer.
On behalf of Bruce
Nolan. We've got a lawyer.
Bruce, I'm not going to lie. We not only have a lawyer on semi-permanent retainer. I mean, he accepts Bush Light, but semi-permanent retainer. I have a podium. We have professional lighting. We have a backdrop. We can make this happen.
I would still like to have the karaoke competition as well.
Oh, 100%. We're going to sort this out as soon as we shut this recording device off. We're going to sort out the fine parameters of this. Bruce, in the meantime, in the run-up to this NFL draft, where can everybody enjoy all of your commentary about what goes on and kind of keep tabs on what comes next for Bruce Nolan.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you listen to this show and you thought to yourself, well, I don't know who that guy is, but I'm in.
I don't know who that guy is.
I am in.
I am sold. In. I'm interested in more of this strange man and his musings. Then you can find me on social media at Bruce Exclusive. I spend most of my social media presence on Twitter. I do dabble in Instagram and Threads and whatnot. And I'm currently writing for Buffalo Rumblings, so you can see written pieces there. And stay tuned, and we'll see if there's something in the works for me to be back on the audio waves.
Guys, this has been great. I'm happy that you get to hear your friend's voice after so long. You know, I almost feel like it's that Tenacious D pick of destiny. Like, dude, I totally miss you. Oh, man.
Was that your... Was
no, that,
that
was
okay.
me. No.
That was like you had like a four.
No, I was trying to hit like a false, not a, I was trying to go higher than I intended to.
Oh.
Yeah. I started singing and then was like, oh, you're in the wrong register.
Foundation and just general feedback for you here is Bloodbath. And McNeese State might have been giving you too much credit.
End the fucking show.
Guys, this has been a lot of fun, but we got to get out of here. I'm Drew Gear. That's Chris Krueger. That's been the Bruce Nolan. And this is your Rock Pile Report.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.